Good. So once again, good morning, brothers and sisters. Welcome back, everybody. Start you off this morning with a little question, okay? Little question for you, just for fun. Who's the most powerful? Now, don't answer out loud, okay? But just in your mind, okay? Who's the most powerful, most important, most influential person in the entire world? Sometimes you hear these questions posed, you know, different publications, they like to dedicate airspace to answering these things. Time magazine has this issue called the Time 100. 100 most powerful, influential, and important people in all the world. USA Today, I think they list the top 25 people in the country, something like that. And there's always a poll taken at this time or that, asking essentially that same question. But the polls always get it wrong, and the real winner is never named. Because the most important person alive is Jesus Christ. Now, once I asked that same question to a friend of mine, once again, just for fun, I said, name me the most important person alive. And he hemmed and he hawed and he scratched his head and he said, I don't know, maybe the Pope? And I go, no, thank you for playing. The most important person alive is Jesus Christ. And he said, oh, come on, man. That's a trick question. Well, it's not a trick, but rather it's intended to provoke a much more important question, a question I hope you'll ask yourself. Do you believe that Jesus Christ is a risen, living person? Or don't you? It can't be overstated how important it is to believe that Jesus Christ really, literally, physically, bodily rose from the dead. It's what our Lord wanted to teach his apostles in his gospel that we just heard, right? And he appears to them in their midst and he says, peace be with you. And their first reaction, immediately, fear. They're afraid that they're seeing a ghost. So what does Jesus do? He does three things. Three things try to convince them that he's real. He says, take a look at me and see. I'm not a ghost. That didn't work. All right, then touch and see. I'm not a figment of your imagination. And neither of those two things work. And you got to love the third thing that Jesus does here. He turns to his apostles and he says, hey, you guys got anything to eat? You got to love the humanity of that. Why did he say that to his apostles? Because a ghost doesn't ask for a snack. A figment of your imagination doesn't ask what's for lunch. He wanted them to know and be absolutely convinced that he physically rose from the dead. It's the linchpin that holds our whole faith together. The bodily resurrection of Christ from the dead. Somebody once asked me, said, hey, Father, why is Easter more important than Christmas? And I said, well, because without Easter, Christmas isn't important at all. If Jesus didn't rise from the dead on the first day of the week, on Easter Sunday, then it really doesn't matter whether he was born in a manger in Bethlehem on Christmas Day. If Jesus didn't actually physically rise from the dead, well, then he's just another Jewish teacher who lived and died same as any of the rest of us. He wants his apostles to know the real truth of it, and we need to be just as convinced as they are. Now, how are we going to do that? Well, it's not going to be by clenching our fists and steeling our jaw and by Herculean effort just saying, I believe. We're going to learn the same way the apostles learned. We're going to learn and we're going to know and believe by seeing. Now, we're not going to see the same way the apostles saw with the eyes of the body. But I'm telling you, there's another way of seeing. It's with the eyes of the soul. In the ancient church, there was a maxim, a saying. They used to say, ubi amor, ibi oculus. Where there is love, there is sight. They said this generations after the original of people who were eyewitnesses to the resurrection of Christ had long since died. Where there is love, there is sight. God takes the initiative, gives you exactly what you need and asks only that you give him a response. And if you do, you begin to see. I'll tell you a little story that I hope makes this a little bit clearer. It comes from one of my favorite books. It's The Brothers Karamazov. It's by the great Russian novelist Fyodor Dostoevsky. Great book. And it's got this little scene in the book. Hope I haven't told you this before. Little scene in the book in which this woman comes to a priest. She wants the priest to prove to her the truth of the Christian faith. The woman's name is Madame Holokov, and she's described as a woman of little faith, very wealthy, very fancy, very well-to-do. And Father Zosima is the other character, very holy man, very saintly man. And she comes to the priest and she says, "Father, I've lost my faith and I want to get it back." "So yeah?" the priest says. She goes, "Yeah. When I was a little girl, I had the most beautiful faith, and I loved the joy and the happiness that my faith gave me. But then I went away to college, and they told me that God wasn't real and God didn't exist, and when you die, there's nothing left but flowers on your grave, and I want to get my faith back. So I want you to prove to me that it's all true." Father Zosima says, "I can't do that." And the woman said, "Well, then I guess I'm going to live and die in despair." Father Zosima says, "But there is a way you can get your faith back." The woman says, "How's that?" And the priest says, "Live Christian virtues. Take every last one of the Ten Commandments and put it into practice with all of your heart. Forgive no matter how much it hurts. Live your life putting other people ahead of yourself as though Jesus Christ were walking in your own shoes. And you will come to see that it's all true." And the woman said, "Oh, yes, Christian virtues. My, boy, that's a very tall order. I don't know if I can do that." And the priest says, "Ah, yes, love in action is a harsh and a dreadful thing compared with love in dreams." But I'm telling you, that's how it works. God takes the initiative. And I don't care where you are in your life. I don't care what you've done or what your circumstances are. He will find a way. God will find a way to find you and give you exactly what you need to respond to him. It's all you need to do. You take the next step, you respond, you begin to see. That's what happens here in the gospel. I love these apostles. Jesus shows up in their midst, and they're not even looking for him. They think Jesus is dead. They're not looking for Jesus. They're locked themselves in a room, scared to death that what happened to Jesus is going to happen to them. Doesn't stop God. He shows up right in the midst of them. "Peace be with you." Right through a locked door. Don't think you can stop God. You're not that powerful. Reminds me of the time when Jesus Christ first met Simon Peter. Do you remember that story? It's in the Gospel of Luke. Before he calls him to be his apostle, Jesus walks up on the Sea of Galilee and goes into Simon Peter's fishing boat and just sits down and starts talking to him. Peter didn't invite him into the boat. Peter doesn't even know who he is. God took the initiative. He gave Peter exactly what he needed, and Peter responded. That's the way it works. And we grow one response at a time. That's what's important. That's what we need to do to see the risen Christ like the apostles saw. It's no accident that Jesus turns to his apostles here and he says, "Hey, you guys got anything to eat?" It sounds like a flippant question, but it's really not. Here's why. It's because ever since the Garden of Eden, ever since Adam and Eve, the Bible has envisioned reconciliation with God as a meal rightly ordered. You got to figure, all our trouble began back in the book of Genesis with a bad meal. Adam and Eve reaching for the forbidden fruit. What God intended to give them as a gift, they grasped as a right. It all started with a bad meal. And ever since then, the Bible has envisioned reconciliation with God as a meal rightly ordered. Go to the last book of the Bible, Book of Revelation. It describes heaven as a great banquet. It's incredible. Or look at the Eucharist. What does Jesus say at the Last Supper? This is the covenant in my blood. Do this in memory of me. A rightly ordered meal that sets all things right. God will give the apostles exactly what they need. All they need to do is respond. It's no accident that Jesus shows up here in the gospel, and the very first thing he says to his apostles is, "Peace be with you." Now, it's interesting. The Bible has two words for peace. You probably heard both of them before. I hope you have. So one is Greek and one is Hebrew. The two words are cosmos and shalom. You know the difference between the two? Cosmos, I'm sure everybody's heard it. The word also means order. You know, you go out into the night sky and you look up at the stars and you look up at the moon. Not anywhere around here, right? Because of Dulles Airport. We can't see anything. But get out into the country. Look up at the night sky. I love to look at the stars because it's so peaceful. It's no reason why the Greeks called it cosmos, right? But that's not the kind of peace that your heart is yearning for. That's just the peace that's an absence of conflict. That's the same kind of peace that you can get, what, if you go on a vacation or if you take a day off or if you can find a few minutes to take a nice peaceful walk. That's not what your heart's yearning for. But there's another word for peace. And it's what Jesus would have said when he spoke to his apostles. He would have looked at them and said, "Shalom." You know what shalom means? Shalom means more than just the absence of conflict. It means all things rightly ordered. It means injustices set right. It means wounds healed. It means injuries forgiven. That's the kind of peace that your heart is yearning for and thirsting for. But you want to know the difference between cosmos and shalom? Cosmos doesn't ask anything of you. All you have to do is sit back and enjoy it. Shalom demands that you cooperate. And that's what God asks of us too. I'm telling you, you're exactly where you need to take the next step. God will give you everything you need and take the initiative if you respond. Please, don't think of your Christian life as a great big heavy burden. You have to live a holy life. Don't even think of the burden of living a holy year. Don't even think of the burden of having to live a holy day or even a holy hour. You know how we want to live? We want to live a holy moment. This one. In God's presence, responding to what he gives us, saying yes to him, and then taking the next step. If we do that, we will begin to see. And no one will need to prove anything to you. It's kind of like what St. John said in the second reading. The way we may be sure that we know him is to keep his commandments. Know him and see him. That's why I'm so fond of saying, if today you hear his voice, harden not your hearts. Amen.